Hi, welcome back to Eye to Eye, a weekly podcast talk show all about passion, flow, and creativity. So while the subject may change, the heart behind it remains the same. I'm your host, Aaron Holman, and my guest today is...
Paul Flanagan.
Paul, I'm happy you were able to join the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Eye to Eye Podcast. I am thrilled that you were able to join us today, especially because you're about to be going on this cross-country journey. Paul is a spiritual guide. He is a cabaret performer. You are so many things. First of all, can you go ahead and tell us your preferred pronouns and describe yourself in your own words?
Yes. When asked the pronoun question, I say, call me whatever you crave as long as you lead with love.
I love that.
That can be he, she, they, bitch, whatever you want. Don't you worry about it.
Well, bitch.
Yes, exactly. And that's, you know, funny. Constantly trying to figure out what to call myself because I do so many things. Producer, performer, healer, I guess would be the top three.
All of those things are something that the world needs, especially more of nowadays.
Right.
You know, the times we're living in are absolutely crazy. So just to get things started, one of the main topics of this show is passion. Which passion of yours came first out of those ones you just listed?
Performing.
Performing. Mm-hmm. Where did that begin?
I started performing when I was... Actually, my very first show was in the backyard of Kathy Mulcady's farm, and I was on a horse and did this epic death scene, and my grandma thought that it was the most amazing thing ever.
Wow.
And from then, I was like, I have to perform. So grew up in choirs, and when we were in choirs, parents tried to get me to play sports, and we quickly realized that that was not going to be the passion. So... I started dancing at 11 and then started doing kid stage at Village Theater in high school and then ran off to New York at 18.
So is that where you're from? Are you from Seattle?
Grew up in Everett.
Everett, mm-hmm.
Yes, I say Seattle.
Well, what was, well, of course. Besides this backyard event, what was the next performance that you did? What, like, continued it for you?
Yeah. So the next, like, the first legitimate show was at the Everett Historical Theater, and that was Dad's Christmas Musical.
Ooh, what's that? I haven't heard of this one.
That is a great question. That was over 20 years ago. I remember playing the child, and my mom was my mother. And it was a production that Mom and I did together. And Mom was incredible. Everybody loved my mother. Everybody loved the Carrie Flanagan.
Still do, I hear.
Yes, still do, correct. Yeah, that was the first. It was just a Christmas show. Like a probably a spinoff of like the Christmas Story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How many people are in your family? And obviously you're not the only performer.
Well, I'm the only performer by profession, I would say. My mother performs on a daily basis to whoever will listen. And it's just me and my brother. My brother John is in the Air Force. We could not be more opposite. He has a stunning wife, Autumn. And then they have two children, Ella, Renee, and Weston, and they are just a ball of energy and so cute. Weston can't be bothered. He's just like, hold me. I don't need to walk. And then they have a Great Dane. They're amazing.
Going back to your passion of performance, obviously your mother performed, like you said, not for a profession, but just out of love for, yeah. I guess, entertaining people.
Yeah.
What led you to going, because where I met you was over in Seattle. You were part of the New Voices performance then. Mm-hmm. How did you know that singing was a path that you were going to be able to continue down and be able to like pursue? When did you know that?
The dancing, the choir was like, oh, this is just something that I do. sing in choirs, you know, boop, boop. And then the dancing is when I really was like, I want to do this. So for a while, I started the ballet track.
Wow. Very difficult.
Yes. And did like a summer intensive at the American Ballet Theater. As, you know, we were dancing 15 hours a day, there was also like an hour of history, watching videos type of situation. Mm-hmm. And as I was sitting there watching the videos of professional dancers, I was like, oh, this is not it.
The realist.
Yes, this is not it. I am not tall, so I can't partner. And I'm not a prodigy, so I'm not going to be a character. So I know that I am not going to be successful in this profession. So that summer, I quickly pivoted to musical theater. Mm. And was like, well, I love to sing, I enjoy dancing, and most importantly, I love being a fool. So, perfect. Like, making people laugh is like a drug. Mm-hmm. And that was the best way to marriage the thruple, you know.
Something that you just touched on, you said getting people to laugh, that's the drug. What's behind that? Why do you enjoy the laughter?
The laughter started as a mask for the homosexuality.
Preach. Go for mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I always say, I'm not actually that funny. I just had to grow up gay. This is a defense mechanism.
Exactly. Exactly. If they're laughing, then they're not bullying. So it was that. It was, and it was also spending so much time with my mom. Mm. Like, I spent most of my time with the ladies. And I really picked up the way that my mom interacted with a group. Mm. And I really respected her for the way that she navigates a group. Tried to apply that to my social settings, which is kind of funny because I would walk into the social settings with the humor of middle-aged woman, and then and then would have to like be agile on how to relate to the children as a child. So it was the marriage of research hashtag watching,
yeah,
and then also applying awareness to my own social settings, and that like keep it on your toes, keep it on your feet. How can you tell a story? How can you keep them engaged? Mm. And I enjoyed that like challenge, I guess you could say.
That kind of storytelling. And yeah, it's a challenge when you're applying that kind of stuff to your personal life. Mm-hmm. Most people aren't thinking that much, you know, in their day-to-day life. But I think it's one of those things about growing up gay. Like you were touching on, it's just a way of surviving, and you have to learn how to navigate. And for every single person, that's going to look different. What was it like both being gay and pursuing musical theater, you know, in Everett or where you grew up? Mm-hmm. Were there any challenges that you faced during that?
I definitely grew up in a conservative household. Mm. And that was immensely difficult because it was polarizing. You have the freedom and the liberation of feeling like you can express yourself when you're among your dancing friends, your cast. Mm-hmm. And then you go home and you have to play straight. And there were times when the polarization became too separate, and I couldn't find where I was in the middle. Mm-hmm. And those times where I couldn't find the middle is when you start to think about ending it.
Oh, heavens, I'm so sorry.
Well, and I never like actually physically tried. It's just I think the psychological
pressures of
not
accepting oneself, not being fully accepted. It's a crazy torture. I would never wish it on anybody, you know, having to just deny who they truly are. When did it become professional for you, your work? And how long have you been doing, you know, performance?
In Washington, because I say Washington because at one point I was doing a show in Stanwood, a show in Everett, and a show in Seattle.
Oh, heavens. At the same time?
Yeah, girl, we were falling asleep in the car. It was pandemonium. but 18, went to New York, went to the American Musical and Dramatic Academy, and went all the way through, so graduated in a year and a half.
Wow.
And then my first professional gig was Beauty and the Beast in Hilton Head, South Carolina. at the Art Center of Coastal Carolina, and that was 06. So I've been doing this professionally since 2006.
Wow, that is a long time. Who yeah. were you? What part were you in Beauty and the Beast? That show is notoriously double, triple cast everywhere.
Oh, honey, I was the wolf. I was the operator of Maurice's vehicle.
Yes.
Because I was the smallest one in the cast, so they put me in the vehicle. In the vehicle. I was like, okay.
There's no reason for you to be inside of it. There's just no reason. You can push this on stage. Right.
Just pedaling and pulling the gadgets. It was hysterical.
That is unreal.
Yeah.
So once you began doing musical theater more professionally after AMDA, what shows have been very impactful for you? What have been some really wonderful experiences you've had?
I ended up doing 4 shows at Art Center of Coastal Carolina in Hilton Head. And that was amazing to just navigate professional theater. The professional life, like what it meant to do cast housing, what it meant to live with these people and perform with these people. That was very informative. And then I did the national tour of the Backyardigans Live. And that was my stepping into tour life. And it was a bougie step into tour life because we had a sleeper bus. We were stars for the children. So we were playing all the A-list cities. It was real cute. We felt famous.
Yeah.
And then came back and did the national tour of A Chorus Line.
Beautiful. I love that show.
Yes. And that was the beautiful thing about that experience is it was the first show that I didn't have a connection with. I auditioned and I got the role. The interesting thing about that is in between Backyardigans and Chorus Line, I had taken an auditioning class. And the big takeaway from that auditioning class was just be yourself. Like, go in there and make sure that you are comfortable with what you did. Don't go in there and try and please whoever is behind the table. Like, go in there and leave with the confidence of what you did in the room. And so I practiced that a lot, and then actually earlier that day my friend texted me and said, we're at Pearl Studios doing an audition for Arizona Broadway Theater, get over here. And I was like, great. So I did that, and then 2 doors down was A Chorus Line. I just bounced into that, and it was like I ended up booking both. Right.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't care.
Yeah.
I couldn't be bothered at that point.
You were at ease on that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the crazy thing about Chorus Line is it was BioArc's production. It was the Broadway revival. It was one of those situations where never been more fulfilled doing the production. And the tour was grueling.
How long did the tour last?
It was 8 months.
8 months. That's a long time.
Yeah. Whereas Backyardigans was like so fun. And there wasn't, the show was fun to perform, but it wasn't like emotionally fulfilling. You know what I mean? After Chorus Line, I come back into the city and I'm like ready. I'm like, okay, I've done a Broadway national tour. Now Broadway is the next step. And then get hit by a taxi and break my ankle.
What?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, that my was right. Goodness. Right after A Chorus Line?
Yeah.
How did you handle that? Are you okay now?
That was 2011. So fully healed physically. Well, I mean, I'm not, we're also old now. We're,
things are so changed. Like,
things have changed. things have evoluted, I would say. But what ended up happening is got hit December 8th, found out I had to have surgery on the 11th, flew home on the 14th, had surgery on the 16th. So it was like a pandemonious week of an entire life switch.
Yeah.
Everything that I had ever known was no more. And I was stepping into the unknown, as the song says in Frozen.
Mm-hmm. Great song.
So, yes. And at the 2012 was rough. 2012 was definitely rock bottom. But that trauma ended up being the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
In what way?
It brought me to my actual dream.
Ooh, getting juicy. So what is the actual dream, Paul?
That is how I started to understand healing. So we got the performance and now we're in the healing journey.
The other calling.
Yes. And so 2012, I started to rush getting back into performance. My first show back was Fiddler on the Roof at Village Theater in end of 2012. And fun fact, I've played the fiddler in Fiddler on the Roof 3 times. And the joke with that one was the fiddler is falling off the roof because I got so sick.
Oh my God.
I got so sick because I wasn't processing. Mm. I was just trying to mask the healing.
Oh man, you are getting into the good stuff. I know exactly what you're talking about. Keep going. I need to hear more.
And so Christmas, I spent 6 days in the hospital because my body was like, you have to focus on this. And I was emotionally broken, physically broken, lost. And Bobby Cotula made me a bone broth soup.
Yeah.
And told me about energy. And
wow, serendipity out the wazoo. What did you learn about yourself and healing?
She sent me to her naturopath and booked an appointment that week. And he told me about how your body has to process energy. And if you don't let it process, then it stays within your energy field, within your cells. And that trauma ripples out and can affect you in many ways. So I had, every time that my ankle hurt, my broken ankle, it was the right ankle, I would physically look down at my ankle and like send negative energy to there. Mm. You're the reason why we're here. You can't hurt. You are doing this to me.
So bad. Ow.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or if something didn't go right in my life, I would look down at my ankle. This is because of you. So not only was I not processing the actual accident, I was sending all of my negative things that were surface happening to that spot. And that was affecting the way that I walked, affecting my hip, affecting my shoulder alignment. Mm-hmm. And the naturopath told me about energy. I got a book about processing it. Then I found an energy healer. Then I found a shaman.
Yes.
Then I dived back into astrology and then found tarot. And just like it set me on this huge adventure, this 8-year adventure in exploring and understanding healing. Mm-hmm.
Healing is one of my personal, I think what it is healing is everybody's own personal responsibility. And it is one of my favorite personal endeavors ever, that inner healing work. I learned the very hard way through observing it through my sister, mm-hmm. that illness does not come from the body alone, you know. It is what you were talking about. It is that holding of a frequency, a thought. Honestly, you're willing it to happen. And that's the part that people don't like about having complete free will, is you are also responsible for making sure that your energies internally, externally, stay, you know, relatively balanced. It is very, very difficult.
Yes.
How long was this recovery process for you? And then what was it like to then bring in the energy into the physical healing for you?
Mm-hmm. When you asked how long is the recovery process, what first jumped into my mind was I will never be done recovering. And it has evolved from an evolution of I am no longer focusing on the taxi isn't the loudest. You know what I mean? Like, I like to think of it as, well, okay, now we're getting really into it. I'm Pisces. I'm a Pisces rising, Aries moon, Pisces sun. So double Pisces. Pisces is the collective subconscious, the end. So this is like a very finale cycle for me if we're living in the world of reincarnation.
Yeah.
And so this feels also like I have a lot of processing to do, not only of this life, but also of past lives. And if you don't believe in past lives and you want to apply this to your journey now, this could be traumatic moments that have happened to you in your childhood, not necessarily quote unquote past lives, because what is patterns? Everything that you are repeating that you need to work through. Right?
Yeah.
So
break it down, Paul.
Yes. So it is, I think the evolution is a taxi, taxi, taxi. Emotional trauma, how does this apply to my life? How does this apply to day-to-day micro traumas?
Yeah.
And then how does this apply to slowly working on the big traumas that we know about? And it's the double balance of the ebb and flow of focus. You can focus on the big traumas, but if you focus too much, then you'll refuse the micro traumas. If you focus on the micro traumas too much, then you're too focused on day to day and you're not aware of the underlying big trauma. And the third element is you have to live.
It's just so simple.
You have to live your life. And so if you're too busy meditating all the time or too busy in your head, then you're not going to be able to exit your home.
Yes. So, oh my God.
It's checking in. It's how's the taxi trauma? You doing all right? Do you need some love? Great. I'm going to imbue you with love.
Wow.
How are the micro traumas? What is evolving? What is affecting me today? Whoa, I can't be on social media today. It is toxic. Okay, we're closing that down. We're going to go for a walk. We're going to go get some groceries. We're going to go treat ourselves.
Being kind to yourself, especially during these times. An old pattern of living that I'm seeing break down is that work super hard and get big reward. You know, that type of living has sort of gone to the wayside. And I think that what people need to remember is that the rest, the loving yourself period, is just as important as whatever work that it is that you're pushing yourself to do. You know, you have to, the loving, the good loving, it needs to go to yourself first, you know? And that's something over the past couple of years I've really come to learn is everybody's journey is their own. We are responsible for our own personal thing, and do not take it personally if somebody's journey is different than yours. I think that that's a big one, because we're all on our own healing and it looks different and it sometimes gets really uncomfortable.
To yes and with what you just said. It's also understanding that self-love is an expression of self-care. Self-care is not a mask for self-love.
Yeah.
And also understanding that we have grown up in a society that doesn't value process. Society values results. And if you are not, and emotional development is not result-driven. Emotional development is celebrating every moment of the process. That is a micro celebration and celebrating your huge meditation moment that you just transcended to different life cycles.
Wow.
You know, it's like, it's the little and the grand. And if you don't understand And if you don't have a way to talk about that, then you won't celebrate it. So you have to ask yourself, what world are you living in? Whose world are you living in? Whose authority are you living by? Are you following the authority of the quote unquote the man, quote unquote the boss, quote unquote the government? Or are you focusing on your process, your celebration, your successes along the journey and owning them? And when you own them, you inspire other people to own them.
Something that I would love to talk about, we're skirting right around it. So
yeah,
another topic of ours is about that state of flow, you know, that creative energy that you find where, you know, you're having a blast and it lasts 3 minutes, but it was 4 hours. What I would like to know is, how do you feel about flow as a spiritual concept? What does it feel like? When do you achieve it? And what does it mean to you?
Okay. There are many different ways to approach this.
A million.
I love this question. I'm going to just give you my buzz things to start, and then I'm going to explain a little further.
Go into it, yeah.
Mark Ravi said to me, if God is infinite, then there can be an infinite amount of ways to reach him.
Love it.
Katie Pfaffel said, Katie Pfaffel, there's a P in front of her name, and I just, I love to say the P, Katie. Pfaffel. I love to say the P, Pfaffel. Katie says, focus on where you're vibrating. And she told me this in response to when I came, quote unquote, came out as an astrology/tarot reader. I was struggling because it was so, I felt so called to it, and I felt so drawn to it, and I felt so exalted when I practiced it. And I was like, well, if I'm doing this, then what does this mean for Sensible Theater Company? And she was like, don't worry about trying to figure out that. Focus on where you're vibrating, and the ripple will affect everything. And the ripple, when I stepped into that, when I surrendered to the vibration, the ripple affected Sensible, healed my relationship with my family, brought a level up with my fiance and I. It just expanded and was stunning. It was stunning.
Yeah, congrats.
And then, like, you can't live in the grand. You have to understand the opposite as well. So it was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful week, an 11 days of perfection and like full connection to spirit and feeling like I was on top of the world and so powerful and empowered and beautiful and nothing could stop me. And somehow my vibrational reach got to India.
Yeah, wow. Like,
a person in India found me on Facebook and asked for a tarot reading. I was like, who are you? But we ended up having this amazing connection that was everything that this person needed to understand was something that I had experienced.
And that's why the energy found each other.
Exactly. And then the week after that, it was dark. It was dark and it was isolating and it was work and it was difficult in the sense of before I understood experiencing all of the positive and all of the negative, I would have questioned the positive. And I would have said,
finding the negative in it.
Yes.
Reinforcing the negative in it.
Yeah. And in that negative space, when I got to that negative space, I would have said, oh, the week that I had before, that 11 days was just, that wasn't real. That was all in my head.
I was just making it better than it was.
Well, yeah, exactly. This is my reality. This is the work. This is what I need to focus on. This is my truth. The work, quote unquote, the work. Mm-hmm. And after understanding you have to experience both, it was, the gift is immense positivity and the opposite.
Balance. It's the full balance. Spectrum. You don't get to pick just the one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this will be over too.
Yes.
This week will be over too. Mm-hmm. And then the next week will be what it is. Maybe it's the middle. Maybe it's a little bit of both. The week after that, maybe it's full out in American Grand again.
Yeah.
And then maybe there's a middle ground. You know, it doesn't have to be so polarizing. But when you say yes to experiencing everything, then you will get to flow. Mm-hmm. If you refuse to accept flow, then you will not grow.
It's a certain mindset that people either find or they have to continue to try to find, is what I think about it. And it is that understanding that you have to take the good with the bad. Both experiences are the complete experience.
And I also think that the other thing is, when I was having the pandemonious week of exuberance, I almost felt like I didn't deserve it. And I almost felt like I couldn't talk about it. Mm. Because in that case, because there was so much, still is, mm-hmm. because there is so much darkness and so much unrest and so much pain in the collective, if I am boasting, quote unquote, mm-hmm. about how well I'm doing, then therefore I will be perceived as insensitive. Thank you. I think there's a way to going about that that can be talked about. Mm-hmm. And maybe after I explain it, you can help me summarize it a little bit shorter. But there's a difference between boasting and inspiring. And there's a difference between owning your truth and presenting what you think people want to see. And if you simply speak your truth, you're not projecting a societal narrative. You are simply speaking who you are and what you are, right? I think the way that I go about that is this could be a downfall, or not a downfall. This could be instead of talking about my own journey, I just talk about love and talk about spirit and talk about tarot and talk about astrology, because that's what I can do. And I don't necessarily talk about the details of the highs and the lows. Mm. Sometimes, you know, if you follow me on the Facebook or the Insta, I'll do like a big post, of where I'm at in my journey and what I've learned. Mm. You know, I'll put a photo of me in a dress and then have this big long thing underneath of the lessons that I've learned. Mm. Which maybe I could be better about talking more about the process and not the lessons after the fact. Mm-hmm. I digress.
Another thing about flow and creativity, creative energy, it's very common to hit dead ends or to, especially during these times, to be really unmotivated. Mm. Do you experience creative blocks? If so, how do you handle those times when it happens?
Oh, yes. Creative blocks and also a list of things to do that I do not want to do.
I'm very much that way too.
Yes. And the way that I navigate that is I list it and I do the things, I list the things that I need to do that I know will not be fun. And then I list the things that I know will be fun. As my treats, quote unquote, or gifts to myself.
It's still work. I love that. You're just like, yes, easier work.
Yes, exactly. And I do the things that I don't want to do first. That way I know that the good stuff is coming. Whenever I'm having a creative block, I put it down and I walk away and I come back later, kind of focused on where it's vibrating. Mm. The energy of it says, as soon as the block happens, the energy says, nope, we no longer want to dance right now, so you need to exit.
I love it. Yeah.
And then I go and figure out what to focus on as that percolates. Mm-hmm. It's almost kind of like how manifestation works, mm-hmm. of you have to energetically feel it inside of you first. You have to dream it up. Mm-hmm. And if you dream it up, and I think the element that is, there's two elements that are missed with manifestation. Mm-hmm. The first is an alignment with spirit, an alignment with whatever you deem as higher power. If higher power and you decide together that what you've dreamed up is correct for your journey, then yes. Mm-hmm. Put energy towards it, make it happen, go. If higher power says, no, ma'am, this is not what you are supposed to be doing, then that will never be manifested because you will be hitting a wall. You will be hitting the wall of what your ego wants and not what is correct for your journey. Mm-hmm. So the next step is the ebb and the flow and watering it when it craves to be watered. Mm-hmm. You say, hey, thing, how you doing today? Do you want some energy? And it's like, yeah, focus on me for a bit. So you send some correspondence, you do some boop boops, you make some phone calls, you do some art, you do whatever that thing needs. Then it says, okay, thank you for the water. I'm drowning.
Yep.
And then you're like, great, now I'm going to go do something else. And then you wait until that thing craves energy again. And that's why I say waiting time, because a lot of people don't allow for the wait. Mm-hmm. They either smother or they forget. So it's a continued check-in of what do you need? What dream? Hey, dream, what do you need? Mm-hmm. Hey, thing that I'm manifesting, what do you need? You let it live or you feed it. Mm-hmm. And then it will come to you. It starts internal, it ripples out, and then it gets mirrored back to you in physical manifestation form.
Wow, Paul, you are hitting some hard truths that are, and you're saying it so very lovely. These are things that I've learned over my years as well, but I didn't learn them with so much ease. I am thrilled to find that so many people have really begun that awakening inside themselves of this personal responsibility of the life that we're creating, you know, through our actions, thoughts, you know, we co-create this reality we share. You're saying these things in a very, very beautiful, succinct way. Very impressive.
Thank you. Thank you.
Something I've seen you do very recently is, like you said, this stepping into your power with your tarot reading and your spiritual guidance for other people. I've seen you do that. Was it in response to the quarantine times? What was the big push for you to step forward publicly with that?
Well, before I moved back to New York, I moved back to New York in June of 19. And about the last year and a half, 2 years of Seattle, I got my first tarot deck and started to do tarot readings for other people, like under the radar, in secret.
Very.
I didn't want to come out as a tarot reader. And because I
Isn't
knew that...
Isn't that funny?
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, full disclosure, I knew that my parents wouldn't like it. And so I was, at the time, what I thought was respecting their beliefs. Mm-hmm. And then through a series of beautiful events, I realized about what it meant to live my life for someone else and not live my life for myself. So we moved to New York. We have like four bouts of intense poverty. I get a job, lose the job. Get a job, job ghosts. Get a job, job ends.
Exhausting.
Get four jobs, and then they all disappear. So we had booked this vacation to Maui like a year in advance. How am I going to do this? Like I've just been through the most intense roller coaster of months, and I have this job, and in Maui, ended up doing tarot and massages for, I charged for it. And I ended up paying for our trip in Maui. And then get back and then go see my friend in LA. And we had this like mind-blowing revelation in a hot tub apartment, and then get back to New York, and I was like, oh, I have $135 in my account. I have a week until I need to pay rent. I need to do something, and was like, it's time. Mm-hmm. I need to just own that I do this. Mm-hmm. So I called my mom and told her. And we talked about it. And then the next day I posted about it. Mm-hmm. And in that week, made enough to pay rent that month.
Wow.
That was February. Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened.
Whoa.
So it was the universe saying, let me just
get you ready.
Yes, exactly.
What a blessing. Oh my gosh.
And I think what was happening, what my friend Sarah and I realized in that hot tub was we were living the energy of Corona before Corona. And in all of my readings for myself, it was like, there's going to be a sudden change. Everything is going to, and it's like, you're not, don't make any decisions right now. Like it was all
I sensed that beforehand as well. Yeah. Like leading up the month before, you know, and we didn't get warning about it until like two weeks before it happened. But like up to a month before, I started doing things that once I looked back on it in retrospect, I was like, here I was getting ready.
Yeah, totally. And what the energy of Corona was, it still is, from an astrological standpoint, is it was the ending of three huge cycles. There was a 2,500-year cycle that was ending, there was a 500-year cycle that was ending, and then it was the end of the astrological calendar. It was Pisces season. And whenever you end something, you need to do a debrief, because the next journey is starting, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't debrief, then you're just going to repeat the cycle. If you do the debrief, then you make aware what you can take with you in your next cycle and what you do not need. It's what were the lessons learned from this cycle? So what are the lessons learned for your own astrological calendar? What are the lessons you learned for your ancestral 500-year attachment? And then what are the lessons learned from the globe? From the universe.
Good Lord, yeah.
From the beginning of mankind, quote unquote. Obviously, we started longer than 2,500 years ago, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's taking a moment to reflect on that, AKA ask, what is the universe trying to tell you? AKA ask, how have you been an active participant in the conscious collective, the conscious system? The conscious systemic racism.
Yeah. Yep.
The conscious journey of how we've grown in suppressing femininity.
Oh my God, yeah.
In understanding what it means to live a taboo life. If you're not living the life of wake up, go to your 9-to-5 job, go home, then what are you doing, right?
Yeah.
Saying I am an artist is quote unquote taboo.
Unfortunately.
Right. Unfortunately. And then the immediacy of what did you learn in the last year? Mm-hmm. How does this affect your current, right? Because we could spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours running and running and running through the past. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't do anything for our current present. Mm-hmm. So you have to dance with it. You have to check in. You have to listen. You have to ask, listen, reflect, act.
I love that.
Ask the questions, listen to what the answer is, reflect on how it applies to your current, mm-hmm. and then act and make decisions for the now. Why did I start telling you this?
You know, it's fucking phenomenal is what it is. I love it. Unfortunately, we have to start moving towards the end of the show.
Yes.
Before we do, though, is there anything else? I mean, we've covered a wide range of topics, and I'll probably have to just have you back is what I have to do. But yeah. Is there anything else you want to share? Any other sort of important little pieces, either about your own story or even our collective energies? Is there anything that you want to share before we move into the last step?
I'm going to plug a film that my fiance and some friends created.
Yeah, please do. Perfect.
The Millennial Experience. Mm-hmm. It's two parts, a film for dance and documentary. Ooh. And talks about cultural appropriation, feminism, and gay culture versus straight culture. You know, casual things.
Oh my God, not at all heavy.
No. There's an Instagram, The Millennial Experience, the film is the Insta, and then alexcrozier.com is where you can find more information about the film. We're in 6 film festivals, and we have 2 recognitions so far. We're discussing distribution deals, so if anybody listening to this has a connection, then boop on over.
There are people who are listening who do, and you better...
Yes!
Because I'm telling you, Paul Flanagan is an incredible everything, but especially an incredible performer. So I can't wait to see this Millennial Experience movie. Yeah. This sounds fascinating.
It's very special. And then I would also give, speaking to the collective, I would say this. Breathe. Breathe.
Breathe. That's one of the biggest parts of being able to let it go is mm-hmm. your breath, breathing in, exhaling out. Mm-hmm. It's literally life.
And I would also say that there's so much talk about needing to process things and needing to let things go and needing to release and get over it. And know that you will never be able to let anything go without imbuing it with love. Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. You have to bathe yourself in love. You have to bathe yourself in warmth and support and acceptance, and then tackle trying to let something process. Mm-hmm. If you do it without the love, you will get frustrated. And you will abort the mission. Take your time. We're not striving for memory loss. We're striving for process.
Very, very timely. I mean, yeah, for myself personally, I'm able to relate that to a very personal thing. And so, like, I know that it's going to relate to everybody who's listening. Go ahead and let our listeners know your social media. So that way, in case they want to book a session with you or just mm-hmm. follow your art, keep up with you, let them know how they can do that, please.
My Instagram is @sensiblepaul. Facebook is just Paul Flanagan, FLANAGAN. I have more information on my website, paulflanagan.com.
I love the way you say your last name.
Yes. And so what's happening is I'm going on a 2-month long road trip.
Is it 2 months?
Yes, honey.
Woo! Thank God I got you.
I know. We are doing national parks. We're doing homestays. We're doing minimal cityage. #corona. And I am still going to be available for readings and privates. And I'm also going to be filming some collective workshops while in the national forests. I have my ring lights and my heels, and we're just gonna be gay.
Oh, my God, that sounds like a blast.
Yeah, well, it's called the Hetero Homo Adventure. I'm doing it with Andrew Garrett. He's the straight one. I'm obviously the gay one. And we're just gonna, we got a car and a tent. We slept in the tent last night, and at 4 a.m. the sprinkler went off. It was hysterical. But we are ready for a road trip. And also, follow along. And if we're in the same city together, we can do socially distanced meetup and do a session in person. So,
how cool.
I do FaceTime, I do phone. Yeah, just reach out and we'll talk about how to process some boop boops.
Oh, Paul, amazing. So now we are moving into our final section of the show, a segment called Passions Lately.
Oh.
It's very, very simple, Paul. What are you passionate about lately? It can be anything. It doesn't have to be a big one. It can be small. It can be, for me personally, I made an incredible cauliflower soup that is like giving me life. It is delicious, filled with turmeric, honey. Yeah. I call it like my, it's like my golden happy cauliflower soup, you know?
That's amazing. Passions lately, because we're getting ready for this road trip, it has been pure nature. And I have been just looking up every beautiful spot for the road trip. And I'm so excited. Now that I know more about energy, I'm so excited to be doing this dance with nature now with the level of awareness that I have. I think 3 years ago, if I tried to do this, I would not respect it. I would have been jaded about it and been too jokey about it. And now I'm really excited to be reverent about how we dance within the beauty.
Yes. I know our listeners can't like see this, but like I have a t-shirt. I call this my Happy Buddha t-shirt.
Yes.
You know, it is just a Buddha with his hands raised.
Yeah.
And that's because it's like, it's my power position. You know, I'm like,
I love it.
About it. What you just said, having the reverence, I am, I have chills thinking about the experience you're about to have. So I'm so thrilled for you, Paul. That's incredible.
It's going to be fun.
And now, our final question for the pod. What is the most recent thing that has happened to you that has made you purely happy?
The most recent thing that has happened to me that has made me purely happy.
Yep.
Well, this... I mean, this is the most immediate recent.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Oh.
You.
Well, you too.
Yeah. You. And then 2 days ago, I got to see my mom and dad. So that was the second.
Well, that's lovely. And it's a perfect place to end things. You've got to go ahead and get packing.
Yes, we do.
Thank you so much for joining me on this special episode of Eye to Eye today, Paul Flanagan.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. I've been your host, Aaron Holman. You can follow me at aholehuman. You can support the show at patreon.com/eyetoeyepodcast, all that nonsense. You know it if you've been listening. So make sure to subscribe, keep up to date with new episodes weekly. And thank you, listeners, for being here with us. Now go outside. We'll be here and gayer when you get back.
Yay!
This episode of Eye to Eye was edited by Dylan Newman and the theme song written and performed by Emily Easley. Make sure to rate and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy podcasts today.